And she said, yes, we didn't go to church, but I got blessed. I knew my rent was gonna be later.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Chasing Big Joe show here at 102.5, 106 for the game. Thank you to Michelle Kennedy to join us. Is our man on the line? Bring him up. Forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders joins us today. Chris, how are you, buddy?
Man, I am doing good. How you doing, my brother? I like that song that you brought in. I thought you were going to play some Menudo or Backstreet Boys, but that's the way to start it off, man.
Oh, Herb, take it in for 10 seconds. Yeah, here you go.
Hey, I started dancing, and I think I hurt my hamstring, though.
that's your new bedroom entry song right there, man.
With some coaching shorts on with a tank top on.
Hey, I got to tell you real quick.
Sure.
Did you know Treylon Burks is fat?
No, he's not.
I heard you on Jared the other day.
I wanted to wrestle Jared. I'm like, Jared, come on, man. You can't just look at a picture and say, oh, his cheeks. Let me tell you something. You can't say a guy's big because of cheeks, man. Come on. Like, really? But here's the thing, man. I really believe that he's in shape, and I'm going to tell you why. Because there's so many things that are at stake. I mean, they brought up two other receivers. They got Cavarilli. They got Hop. And he automatically went to the third receiver. So you don't think that he's going to come in shape. You don't think that he's going to have a mindset of saying, you know, I need to prove to Brian Callahan, I need to prove to Mr. Tolbert, the wide receiver coach for the Tennessee Titans, that I can play this game. So there's a lot of things at stake.
Would you – we talked the other day about making him, you know, as an H-back. And I know if he's getting stronger. I mean, could he block? Could he go out of the slot?
Yeah.
Could he be a tight end? I mean, you've got to use him somehow.
Yeah, but I think he's going to have a good season this year. And the reason why I say he is because, you know, this is a great chance to where the pressure's off of him. And I, you know, when you get drafted in the first round, there's a different type of pressure of, okay, I got to perform. I'm getting scrutinized every play. Now he can sit back and say, you know what? You know, I know they're counting on Calvin Ridley. They're counting on Hop, but I still got the potential, and I still got the talent. Let me give you a perfect example. In 1998, you know, they were talking about that we didn't have no receivers. Houston Oilers last time didn't have no receivers, so they brought Kevin Dyson and Yancey Thigpen in. So I automatically went to the third receiver. So instead of me getting mad and getting, you know, cussing at the coaches and yelling, I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to play so well that they have to play. And I think, you know, Treylon Burks is going to have that same mentality.
What would you tell him if you had an hour with him? What would you tell him?
You know what I would do? I would, first of all, I would invite him over, sit him down, and push the playbook away. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to say, listen, Treylon Burks, you have a lot of potential. But the thing about it is, man, you got to go out there and believe that you can do it. I mean, because right when he first came in the league, everybody was talking about he's injury prone, he can't do this and that. So the one thing I was sitting down and tell him that I believe in him, because that's all he needs. I'm telling you, it's all about somebody believing you. Brian Callahan can believe you. You know, Tolbert can believe in you. You know, all the coaches say, you know what, I believe in you, and your game will go to another level. Just like, you know, when Jerry Rice, you know, got drafted in the NFL. His first year, it was terrible, but it was a coach and a staff to say, you know, in spite of the season that you had, I still believe in you, and now he's one of the best receivers ever in the league.
All right, do we put too much on the fact that Callahan did not bring up Burks' name in his press conference the other day?
I think a lot of people are. But even though he didn't say his name, and I'm Treylon Burks, and I hear that, that's going to light a fire. I'm telling you, it's going to light a fire. So everybody's looking at it as a bad thing. Oh, he didn't say his name. But I guarantee you that when Treylon Burks steps on practice the first day, he is going to be running routes like his hair is on fire, because at the end of the day, he's a competitor. He's a guy that wants to win. He's a guy that says, you know what, I know people say I can't do it. They say that I'm injury prone. They say all this nasty stuff, but watch me this year. And I think that's the attitude that he's got to have.
I was going down looking at receivers in the NFL that have played longer than 15, 16 years, and there's guys you never heard of, like Ricky Prohl.
Oh, I remember that dude.
Played 17 years in the NFL. I mean, he played 244 games. But I'm saying, you know, at some point, and you're the perfect guy, you and Derek Mason asked this, at some point, when does technique take over speed?
No, listen, that's the misconception. Is everybody thinks that, okay, if I run a 4.3 or 4.2, that it classifies me of being a great wide receiver. But there's a lot of guys who run 4.2 that don't know how to run routes. You know, when I first got in the league, you know, everybody saw me as a speed guy, a guy that could run 4.2 and run a 10.21 and 100. But there were some things that I need to know as in running routes. Well, I got to have a plan to the line of scrimmage, get the guy off the spot, lie with my eyes, chest over my knees, burst off the cut, all these things at the top of the route. So once I mastered the technique, then now my game went to a different level. And the one guy that I absolutely loved, it, in my opinion, has some of the best technique that I've ever seen is Derek Mason. What Derek Mason does at the top of the route is explosive. He gets out of his cuts. He lies with his eyes. His technique is flawless. So when you have guys that are not fast, they get separation by their technique. And that's why Derek Mason, those guys that didn't have the top-end speed, were so successful.
All right, so would you put Burks at slot? Like, I went back and watched his highlight reel from Arkansas, right, and out of the slot, nobody could cover him.
No, but see, it's more than just running choice routes and running slants or running hitches or being a linebacker. If you put him in a slot, if you put him in a slot, he can run bubbles. He can run a speed sweep just to get the ball in his hands. Because you look at when he, I think it was a couple of years ago when they played Alabama. And Alabama, he caught a little screen, and he took it 76 yards. And then he caught another bubble and took it like 40-something yards. So if I'm the offensive coordinator, if I'm a guy that's calling plays, then I'm going to put the kid in position to make sure that he succeeds. What does he do well? When the ball gets in his hands, he runs. He's good after the catch. Speed sweeps, bubbles, and quick screens. That's how we use him in the slot.
You know, I'm also looking up all these other receivers. I know injuries. If you don't get injured,
absolutely,
you play a long time. But you got guys like James Lofton, Andre Reed, Chris Carter. And if I remember, these guys didn't run 4.2s.
No, but their technique was flawless. Their technique was outstanding. And another guy that wasn't fast who I absolutely love, I think you named him, was Chris Carter. Chris Carter probably maybe ran a 4.6, but you watch what he does at the line. You watch how, you know, he runs to the spot. You watch how he lies with his eyes. You watch how he has a game plan at the line of scrimmage. And it just shows you that you don't have to run a 4.3 or 4.2 to be successful, because at the end of the day, it's about creating separation. How do I create separation? At the line of scrimmage, getting a DB's hips locked away from where I'm going, lying with my eyes, you know, burst off the cut, beat me back to the spot, to the ball. All these things that create separation. So, you know, I get upset because all of a sudden you see a kid comes in, he's 6'3", 6'4", and he runs a 4.2, and they automatically say he's a great receiver. It's not true. He can't get off the press, and he can't run routes. It's the whole thing that you need to be a great wide receiver.
Exactly. I spent some time with Colton Dowell last couple weeks ago, seventh-round draft choice. He's from Mount Juliet, played at UT Martin.
Mount Juliet.
And we were talking about on the team, and he's like, man, I love – we're talking about the new kickoff rule, and he's like, man, I love it. That's how I can contribute to this team. And watching him talk about contributing to the team, not as a wide receiver, but as a very integral part of special teams, was kind of eye-opening, because here's a guy that he's a receiver, he wants to catch passes, he knows it's a crowded room, but he also, same time, Chris realizes, hey, I can make this team be a good factor for these guys on special teams. Do a lot of guys not understand this?
A lot of guys don't. They think that, okay, if I come in a wide receiver, then I just can play wide receiver. But here's the thing. Just imagine if Chris Sanders and a guy named Eric came in, and they were both great wide receivers. They come in, and, you know, their skill set was exactly the same. But then you have Eric over here that plays punt return, that plays kickoff return, that plays all these other positions. He's more valuable than a guy that plays one position. So when you have a wide receiver like Dowell that has a crowded wide receiver room, the more you can do, the more you can stay. And that's what made D. Mace so valuable with the Tennessee Titans, because he just wasn't a receiver. He was valuable at punt return. He was valuable at kickoff return. So now you got a guy that has a similar talent as Derek Mason, but the reason why they keep Derek Mason because he plays so many different positions, and that's why Colton Dowell understands how big it is.
Do you have to check your ego at the door?
You got to check. But see, here's the thing. Yeah, you have to check your ego, but here's the thing that we got to understand. Just imagine, only 1% of people make it in the NFL. So if they say you play special teams or kickoff return in the NFL, that means you're a 1%er. You see what I'm saying? So it's not that you're playing Little League Pop Warner and you have the one-bar face mask. No.
Right.
Yeah. But you're in the NFL and you're a freaking 1%er. So if they ask me to play kickoff return, you know, why would I have an attitude when I'm making $560,000 to run down and tackle somebody and hit them in the snoot? Come on, man.
I'd do that for $50,000 a year.
Exactly. And I had the one-bar face mask, the big knee pads, everything.
A prime example is he just retired, but Matthew Slater played for the Patriots, played 16 years in. He was drafted as a wide receiver of UCLA, knew he wouldn't be a receiver, and became a special teams guy and just might be the best special teams guy of all time.
Yeah, but you know the other guy from remember the Dallas Cowboys? They call him, was it Ruth? I can't remember his name. But he played fullback. He's a commentator. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Daryl Johnston.
Daryl Johnston. I mean, he did a little bit of special teams, and that's why he was so successful, because he played fullback, but also he played every special teams. And I look back in my career, you know, I wasn't a great returner. I wasn't a punt returner, because you got to have a totally different mentality. But I would love to run down there on kickoff, weighing 170 pounds, trying to tackle somebody. I wish I can do that.
Exactly. Jeez. All right. So the Titans did their offseason workouts. They started Monday. How much does I know he's only his second year, but is this now Will Levis's locker room? Is this now Will Levis's team?
I really believe it is, because the thing about it is he's the guy now. He doesn't have to worry about, okay, if, you know, Ryan Tannehill or any other quarterback is going to come in and take his position. And I think he's going to have a better season this year, because now we always talk about players taking ownership, and now he can take ownership. And ownership is not running around and telling everybody what to do. Taking ownership and saying, you know, okay, you know what, let's take this, let's take what we have and let's learn and build at it. So, you know, he's learning this guy. He's got new faces in the building. But once they get camaraderie, once they learn each other, once they spend time, that he understands that we're going to take ownership as a team, but not as an individual.
When did you came in the same draft as Steve McNair, right?
Yes, the third, yes.
When did he take over? When Chandler left? Because I know Steve was a very humble guy.
Yeah, he was a very humble guy. And I think the first 2 years, you know, it was very frustrating for Steve McNair, because he came from Alcorn, you know, the star and everything. Then now you have to sit and learn. I think that when he really took ownership, and this is just my opinion, is when he won the MVP with the Ravens. I mean, and the reason why, was it the Ravens? No, it was, I'm sorry, not the Ravens, the Titans.
When he yeah, 03. He cut 03. With Peyton Manning. He shared it, yes.
Exactly. When he won it, that's when I think he took ownership, because the one thing that he understood is he wasn't afraid to make a mistake. You know, when he first got in the league, he wanted to please the coaches so well and do so well that he wasn't McNair-ish. But once he came back to McNair-ish and said, you know what, I'm not afraid to make a mistake, I'm going to take a chance, then that's when his career took off. Great, great quarterback, and he should be a Hall of Famer one day.
Was that all weird between him? Because Chris Chandler couldn't stand him.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, they couldn't stand each other. It's like a pit bull and a gerbil. I mean, they did not like each other. Let me rephrase this. It wasn't Steve McNair that didn't like Chris Chandler. Chris Chandler didn't like Steve McNair because the threat of him taking his job. And everybody feels that. But at the end of the day, you know, don't you want the competition? I mean, those guys would come to the sidelines and they wouldn't even talk to each other.
Ugh.
And I think that is. Can I just be real with you? That's if I'm a starting quarterback, and I say this respectfully, I'm never going to disrespect Chris Chandler, but if I'm a starting quarterback in the NFL and I'm pouting because they're bringing some competition in, then that's the immaturity and insecurity that you have. It's not Steve McNair. Steve McNair handled it with great, great class.
Well, what was it like, though, when you got to a crowded wide receiver room? I mean, you're bringing these guys, you know, you bring in, talk about Yancey Thigpen,
yep,
and Kevin Dyson. And I know, you know, we're all human. Your feelings were a little hurt, but at the same time, you're like, all right, we're going to do this together. Was there a talk? Was there a come together? How was that like?
Let me give you the whole scenario. When they were doing the draft in 1998, and when they said some bad things on me, you know, during the draft, oh, Chris Sanders, whatever, he's this and that, my feelings were hurt. I mean, I was pissed. I was sitting in my basement with tears in my, like, this is, I started 2 years before that, and y'all going to say this negative stuff. So as an individual, this is what I had to do, is I had to tell my emotions to shut up. And my emotions said, oh, the coaches did that. I said, nope, shut your mouth. And what we're going to do is we're going to work hard. We're going to do everything we did. So now we get into the receiver room. It's crowded. You got Derek Mason. You got Isaac Bird. You got Yancey Thigpen. You got Kevin Dyson, who's a first rounder. But here's the thing that was so beautiful about the whole thing. If those guys in that locker room loved each other. So if Dyson caught 5 passes, I caught 1, Derek caught 0, nobody cared. We was just excited about being around each other, and that's why we won in 1999, because nobody cared. Everybody knew their role. They knew that I'll catch a pass once in a while. Dyson will catch some once in a while. Mason might not catch none. But at the end of the day, we love each other in that room, and our whole vision was to get to the Super Bowl, and that's why we went in 1999.
We call that a team.
That's a team.
Right.
But you know what we did? And this is the last thing. Did you know what we did? Because my wife says this all the time. She says, Chris, when you live your life now, you got to live it intentional. And the reason why I say that is when we were in that receiver room, we loved each other intentional. Derek encouraged me. Dyson would encourage me. I would encourage each other because we did it intentional. And when you love somebody intentional, it will work. So that's what I want to say.
What is? Let me ask you this before we let you go.
Sure.
I know the off-season workouts are going on. If a guy, if they're voluntary and a guy is not there,
yep.
How does that play inside? Because we could say all the niceties, like, oh, that's okay.
Sure.
But does it mean a little something when they're not there and you're all, you know, kind of sweating together at the same time if there's not really a great excuse why he's not there?
Yeah, but if I'm a leader on a team, then I'm going to call them. I know they have their individual workouts and they do their own thing, but if we're going to build camaraderie, then we need to be there. Like when I came in 1995 and I played the Houston Oilers / Tennessee Titans, like you have a Blaine Bishop, a Marcus Robertson, you know, a Jackson, Stevie Jackson. You didn't have to say anything. You just knew that we had to be there. And I just think it's a different era. The guys, I want my own trainer. I want to do yoga, which is absolutely great.
Right.
But if we're going to build camaraderie, we build a team, then we all got to be there. Because I got to get to know you. And I think that's why it's slipping off a little bit.
Do you still hold the long jump record at Ohio State?
Yes, sir. Indoors, 26.9. I hope I got nominated this year to be in the Track and Field Hall of Fame. So pray that I get in. But it's still in there.
Well, no. I want the outdoor. I don't care about the indoor.
No, indoor is harder. I didn't get the outdoor. I'm ranked in, I think I'm number 4 of all time at Ohio State. But indoors, I'm ranked number 1.
Now, did you break Jesse Owens' record?
Jesse Owens' long jump record in 1992. And I didn't know I did it. After I jumped, my coach said, you know what you just did? I said, what are you talking about, coach? He said, you just broke Jesse Owens' long jump record. Had a bad haircut when I did it, too. It was awful.
That's just I mean, it's almost indescribable. That's amazing.
It's a blessing. I don't mean to get emotional. I know we got to take a commercial.
That's
but
right.
That record, you know why that record means so much to me in 1992? Because at the beginning of that year, I had to sit out. The year before, I had to sit out because I was ineligible for football. Then the next year, and I couldn't run track. Then the next year, I got hurt. And then that year, I was this close to coming home. I said, Mom, I can't take this anymore. I want to go home. I can't. This hurts too much. And I went out for track. The first meet, I jumped 25.2. I'm like, okay, whatever. Next meet, I jumped 26.2. The third meet, I jumped 26.9.
Ooh.
And it always reminds me that even when you want to quit, there's a blessing right around the corner. And that's why that record means so much to me.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I don't have any records, but when I was at junior college, I got homesick and I called my mom. She's like, that's great, honey. You're not coming home. And I was like, what? She's like, I'll help you find a place to live, but you're not coming home. And I was like, you know what? And it changed my life. I mean, that was tough love from mom to – because if I would have come home – if you would have gone home, Chris Sanders, you'd still be in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, doing nothing.
Yep.
Just doing nothing, getting in trouble, man. That's why that record means so much to me. And can I say one more thing? And I know we got to go.
Always.
Just like with this record, this is why I love this record. Because after I broke the record, I did a study on Jesse Owens. He went to the 1936 Berlin Olympics. And here's the great part about it is he went through a lot of adversity. He went through a lot of racism. And when he walked into the stadium booed him. And Hitler, they all booed him. They wouldn't say nothing. They wouldn't stand up. So the guy wins 4 gold medals. And my God in heaven, the same crowd that booed him had to stand up and give him a standing ovation.
Woo!
So what I'm saying to you is when people say bad stuff about you or you go through adversity, the same people that laughed at you are going to have to sit and give you a standing ovation.
Beautiful. You're a beautiful man, Chris Sanders.
I love you, brother, man. You done got me all excited, dangummit.
Always. Thank you, man.
Love you, brother.
All right. See you, buddy. Chris Sanders, Forever Titans wide receiver. Always love having him on. Hey, the Masters is underway. Our 2024 Masters leaderboard update is brought to you by Burger Republic. Go try their limited time green jacket burger. We need one of those, Dr. Crane. Then we need Burger Republic to bring us a green jacket burger for a true Masters experience. Again, Masters leaderboard update brought to you by Burger Republic. Go try the limited time green jacket burger for a true Masters experience. You listen to the Chase and Big Joe Show brought to you by Omni Natural Hotel. Coming back on the next break, we're going to give away the winner. You're on an all-inclusive suite for the Jeff Dunham Show on Sunday. So many people register for this. We'll give you the winner when we come back next, right here. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.